In honor of self-care, what has been your post-election pick-me-up?
I'm Katie Rich, and my actual answer is smiling at a baby, but I also recommend A League of Their Own because it is about a bunch of women doing things for themselves without men being in control, and I need that right now.
Hey, it's me, David the Seven, and the singles that have thus far been released from the Hamilton mixtape, there have been four. They're all great, and especially the One Shot and Immigrants remix songs have been keeping me focused.
I am Matt Patches, and I plopped on my couch in the days after the election to watch The Simpsons. Lots of it.
Ah.
Old Simpsons, season 11, actually, specifically, is what I've been digging through because I'm trying to find, like, the switch moment. I'm not sure I know when that is, and if listeners have an idea of when they think that switch comes, I'm curious. But yeah, lots and lots of Simpsons. Very funny. On FX's streaming site, I should say. Short answers for this part.
Was that well after they predicted President Trump?
I don't know. When was that? When did they... Lisa Simpson does that at some point? I don't know.
Well, so Lisa becomes president after President Trump.
Oh, god damn.
Which is, you know... And then, did you see the chalkboard gag they had this week?
No.
It was Bart just writing, "It sucks to be right."
Oh, boy. Everything's a reminder. Okay. Every escape is still a reminder.
I know.
But that's how it was. That's how it is.
I'm surprised there's no listicle out there of pop culture that has been ruined by Donald Trump. Like, we already lost The Cosby Show, and now Trump's just going to go ruin a bunch of other stuff.
I've also been watching a lot of Adventure Time, which in the last season had this, like, weird streak of political, like, there's a obnoxious
guy. Are we just talking to each other?
Who takes over. Yes.
What's happening?
There's an obnoxious king who takes over, and it was relevant. Sorry.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good. Then, well then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's awesome. Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room, episode 145. It's Tuesday, November 14th, 2016. And on this day in 1956, Elvis released his first film, Love Me Tender. And truth be told, I don't think I knew that there was a movie called Love Me Tender starring Elvis.
Now you have something to watch in the wake of the election. I'm sure it'll make you feel good.
So we're recording this after the election. Last episode you've heard of us was before the election. I don't know that I'll ever be able to listen to that because the hope in our voices might be too depressing.
Although some people tweeted at us at FITWR, plug, that they enjoyed listening to it after the fact. It was giving them minor hope. I don't know what about it was, but I don't know. Maybe there's hope to find there.
We're still here, and we don't have David for non-election related reasons. Don't worry. I realize his Twitter feed might be the most political of all of ours, but he's got work to do. So he'll be back. But has anyone looked at our reviews in David's absence?
We do have reviews. We do have reviews. Three reviews. Should I read them?
Please.
Yes.
I can't do a David voice.
Wait, are they positive? If they're negative, then maybe self-care indicates we should not.
They're actually very positive. I'm surprised because I figured we might have a few too many, like, or maybe laughing at us for what we recorded last week. I don't know. It was all a daze last week. Anyway, this is what people said this week. First review is 5 stars. Thanks for the fighting, says Alternative Owl. I've been a frequent listener of Fighting in the War Room and its sister podcast for quite a few years now. The host's insight and discussion of art and pop culture have always brightened my mood, and as I don't have peers with my voracious cinephilic interests, I wanted to review this wonderful underrated podcast, but hadn't been able to express my gratitude until now. Following the horrid results of the election, that was their words, not ours, I needed an antidote to the toxic hopelessness. I binged your back catalog episodes over a sleepless night, and miraculously, I didn't feel like angrily beating up every white person in my state. I live in Michigan, disappointingly. Though I deeply fear what our future has in store, I hope to rely on Fighting in the War Room as a constant reminder of the wonderful. Thank you for your unabashed liberal discourse and for your celebration of film. Even in hopeless times, you guys remind me that humanity is found in the best of film and friends. Thank you for fighting. Well, that was very nice.
Oh, my. That is so nice.
That was nice.
Yeah. And My husband is from Michigan. This is the first election he had not voted in Michigan, actually, and he still feels a little guilty.
Now he has to go back and re-register.
We've lived in New York for 10 years, so it was like really time for him to vote here. But no one expected Michigan to be close, so I get the pain.
Our next review is also 5 stars, still fighting. Oh, these are very positive. Suddenly, having fighting in the title of our podcast is a positive. Who knew? After a truly horrible day, one of the worst any of us have had to live through, I wanted to take a few minutes to finally leave a review on this podcast of all things. This is Ace of Knaves. I realize I did not say the name. Ace of Knaves. And I'm doing that because you're wonderful people who make my week better. I'm doing that because art still matters and sharing it with each other and arguing over it still matters. Hard as that is to believe right now. When events feel too big and our lives feel too small and it's so easy to give into despair, and I've done that today a lot of times, but then I had to get back up and keep going. It's been hard for me, and I can't imagine how much harder it's been for millions of others. There is hope in that strength. There is hope in each other. There is hope in the future and the world we still need to make and live in together, all of us. And soon we will be able to forget ourselves again, to feel joy in more than fleeting moments. Soon we'll see a way forward. And movies will be there, not merely as an escape, but as a source of meaning, community, and triumph. We are not over. There is no such thing as an ending. With love, Michael. P.S. Have Joanne on more.
We should have Joanna.
That is
on,
a future we need.
Soon.
Yes, we do. We need.
Her social justice warrior credentials are more important now than ever.
She's lost Decoding Westworld. We'll have to get her back after that world is exposed and comes to light.
Exposed?
Yeah. Well, I feel like Westworld is exposing itself slowly. That's not an appropriate word? I don't know. Maybe it's dirty.
Yeah.
Final review here. 5 stars, shorter review. The best format, says Spro11. I still do not understand how this isn't more popular. We agree. A podcast with such a unique and engaging format and hosts who are thoughtful, funny, and understanding. A special shout out to the music choices. Dave, you should be.
Yes.
Hey.
I see people tweet at David congratulating him on the music choices, and that brings me great despair. That's Dave.
I mean, you did the Fridays for a little bit, so there was some music choices. But in the past couple weeks, if you've noticed me perhaps expressing some feelings in between segments, that is totally on purpose.
Well,
oh wait,
we have a lot of feeling. Oh wait, were you going to lead this into our next segment?
No. Perfect. There's one more thing we should mention before we wrap up this intro segment, which is a very kind write up we got from Film Independent.
Oh yeah,
mention that. I just set you up to mention that.
Oh well, we did an interview with a writer at Film Independent whose name I'm not going to
Matt Warren. Right, Matt Warren.
God, that makes me sound horrible. He interviewed us about our podcast and kind of an ongoing series about a podcast.
Film podcasts.
It's called Podlight. That's the name I was trying to come up with. And
it's like a spotlight for podcasts.
Yeah,
it's like light for your ears. Light for your ears.
We'll include a link somewhere. Probably on the website. He just interviewed us. There's a picture of us from the Facebook header. It's got our origin story. It was lovely. It was really nice talking to him. And it's fun. I don't know. It's fun talking about what we've been doing for 5 years now.
And now it's all going to change. No. It's not.
And also,
I mentioned loving you guys in the same sentence as liking also having like a running record of all the shit we've been through. So I felt like this is a perfect time for this interview to drop.
I know. And please continue leaving us reviews. You do not have to be nearly as glowing as the reviews we have this week for us to appreciate them and for them to help us find new listeners. So we really appreciate it. And now,
a word from our sponsor.
Speaking.
loud music here.
I got one job, two job, three when I need them. I got 5 roommates in this one studio, but I never really see them. And we all came America trying to get a lap dance from Lady Freedom. But now Lady Liberty is acting like Hillary Banks with a prenup.
So I was the first person on this podcast to get married. And I know that the week that I got married, we had some kind of wedding themed segment. I can't remember what it was exactly.
I think we recommended
findableatfightinginthewarroom.com.
I think we recommended wedding movies.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But we went very specific this week. That is the week of Matt Patch's wedding. It's very exciting.
Yay! We'll all, finally here.
We will all four be in the same place for the first time in, like, 2 years?
I know.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy.
Have to put something on Twitter.
No podcast next week.
Yeah, we'll still be recovering. And so, Patches, tell me what you wanted to discuss on the topic of weddings.
Well, I just had a phone call with my wedding DJ to figure out, to finalize our music cues and our music arrangements and dance playlists and all of that thing. And something came to my mind because he mentioned it, which was, so we use this app where we can basically upload song recommendations for the different portions of the wedding. And look, I've been to a lot of weddings now. And I've been to some disastrous weddings as in terms of music that were at least not my
sub-tweet.
Cup of tea. Yeah. Okay. Now I feel bad. Actually, the people I'm subtweeting will never hear this. So they just had like full back all country music that was kind of skewed towards the 70s and 80s. Maybe it was their cup of tea. No one was dancing. And then modern country. Yeah, that didn't work either. And wrong audience, perhaps. But people were not dancing. And then I've been to weddings where it's so many oldies or too dancey music, like too modern, and having it's like a rave.
Because you have to have the old people dance.
Right. So that's the trick, right? Because I'm thinking about my parents and I'm thinking about my grandparents and I'm thinking about all these different types of guests. How do I get as many people dancing as possible? Because that's going to make a great wedding. If people are sitting down, aren't into it, then it loses the vibe. And then the people who want to dance feel awkward and then they don't dance. It's kind of like it's a very slippery slope. So
isn't your DJ supposed to help do some of this?
Oh, of course. Of course. Like this DJ is legit. Scratch weddings, guys. If you're getting married in Long Island, highly recommend DJ Trife. He seems great so far. We'll see after the wedding. But yeah, no, he's definitely going to spin and like read the room. That's part of it. But of course, oh, my food's here. Let me come back to this point in 1 second.
Dave, how's your year in weddings been?
Man, it's been okay. My cousin got married and I sat down too fast on some thin fabric and there's like a hole in my pants. So I had to go get a new suit this weekend.
Wait, what does sat down too fast mean? Like on the thin fabric in the suit?
And so like the fabric on the suit together with like the chair I was sitting on like rubbed a hole like sandpaper and like it's a tiny hole, but it's like I need new pants.
Oh,
and then
man.
I was like, fuck that, I'll just get a new suit.
I'm back. That was not my food. Right. That was an Amazon Prime delivery that Michelle made. So my food's still
Michelle
gonna come.
Ordering on Amazon Prime right before your wedding.
Cat
your wedding
cat
stuff.
Food. Wait, what was I saying? Oh, that he's gonna read the room. So he's going to read the room, but the one thing that we do on our end is either recommend songs or not recommend songs. So there's a whole list of things, do not playlist. And getting to the original point, he was like, wow, you guys have a lot of songs in your do not playlist. So I was like,
what are some examples?
The do not playlist has, you know, Don't Stop Believing.
Well, we're going to get to that. I have a whole point to make about that.
Okay. It has, you know, the corny song. It has the chicken dance, that sort of thing.
Okay.
I don't want anything
dance.
Corny. I don't want anything
YMCA?
Super dancey. No Black Eyed Peas. I just can't handle like
what?
The true fluff.
That's oh, man. No.
What about like
you're leaving no room for drunk irony.
What
patches.
About like Shout? Like how where does that fit in?
Shout was a huge debate because it can be fun, but we've heard it at so many weddings. I mean, it's just, it's
sure.
Overdone. So, oh, wait, I'll read you some of our absolutely no music list. Gangnam Style, out. Cha-Cha Slide, no. Thong Song, absolutely not. Mambo Number 5, come on, at a wedding, My Heart Will Go On, no. I mean, Call Me Maybe, we put that one on there because it's just like...
I feel like the DJ is probably offended thinking that you would never play My Heart Will Go On at your wedding in 2016.
Well, yeah, and so it's corny stuff. Oh, God, here comes my food. Okay, this is the last one. I'll be right back.
Dave, can we leave this entire segment unedited?
Thus far, I'm kind of enjoying it. It's
Dave,
like he jumps right back in. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm going to continue the conversation. What is the best corny wedding song to you? Like, what's the one that you would not get rid of?
The best corny wedding song? See, I'm a big fan of like that drunken irony thing, so it would be something Sly, like the Black Eyed Peas for me. But I like the idea that something that I think is corny, people could also genuinely enjoy without it being like a huge red flag either way. So I'm kind of okay with anything. I'm just like a big fan of like you throw down Michael Jackson and see where things go from there.
I mean, I don't want to make this point too much with Patches Gone, but I feel like the democracy of the wedding is that you're there and you don't have to be hip, and it doesn't matter if it's a song you've heard 100 times. Like, you're going to dance with it because your grandma's there, and like, that's fun.
Yeah, I would like to dance to Call Me Maybe with Patches' relatives.
Well, you're going to get another Carly Rae Jepsen song at my wedding. You're going to get the better Carly Rae Jepsen songs.
I mean,
Wait, does anyone really want Carly Rae Jepsen deep cuts at a wedding, or do you want like the hit that you can sing along to?
Hold on.
I mean, all right.
It's not a deep cut. Run Away With Me is the Carly Rae Jepsen on our do playlist.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
That's a good. Okay, so the point I wanted to make about Don't Stop Believin' is that we had that on our Do Not playlist because, as mentioned before, my husband's from Michigan, and the line "born and raised in South Detroit" is inaccurate because there is no South Detroit. South of Detroit is Windsor, Canada, in some weird fluke of geography. And we'd heard it at a million weddings. We didn't want to hear it. So we had it on our Do Not playlist, and the band that we had somehow read the room correctly and said, no, we're going to ignore their request and play Don't Stop Believin' anyway. And it was the biggest hit of the night because people love hearing Don't Stop Believin' at a wedding. And our kind of desire to out-hip ourselves and like not try to be like everyone else would have stopped us from having this really great moment.
Sure.
So ever since then, I've been a believer in like corny wedding songs really have their place in this world.
I guess I just, there's a line, right? If the room demands "I Got a Feeling" by Black Eyed Peas, then I guess play it. I don't know what the room looks like in order to demand that song, but I feel like we're providing them with better alternatives, more personal music. Like, look in.
Yes, which is important.
Our soul song for this wedding is "Chandelier" by Sia. That is the song that we want just everyone to be losing their minds and like swaying on the dance floor, go crazy. Now, that's not like going to be the biggest song of the night because not everyone knows that song, but it's still like, that's the soul song, right?
I was going to ask you what your first dance is going to be too, but I feel like you don't want to spoil it.
I can't. No spoilers here. but like,
for the listeners who won't be at your wedding.
You're saying that you want to read a room and you want to play Don't Stop Believin' at the right moment, but like, don't you want control over that? Don't you want to hear your favorite songs?
No, you do. And I think a really good band or DJ will recognize the ones that are your favorite songs, but also be able to read the room. Like, there are songs that I really wanted to hear at our wedding that we didn't wind up hearing. Like, they didn't play Hey Ya, which would have been like my number one choice for what would have gotten played. But I was so happy with what wound up coming, including Don't Stop Believin'. And I mean, they were just a good band. Like, they read it correctly. And I assume your DJ will as well.
Now, what do you think about requests by your guests?
Ooh, that's a slippery slope.
Yeah, it sure is.
What do you think, Dave?
I think if you're part of the wedding party, then you have a special relationship, but otherwise, no peanut gallery requests.
That's a good policy.
Wedding party.
If you're part of
you never know
party,
when the wedding party has to like bail you out for some reason.
Yeah, because sometimes like if the bride suddenly realizes she forgot to put something on the list and wants to hear it, like the wedding party should go up there and be able to request it.
That seems
If you're also doing an after party, then requests are all it is. Like, if you've got like people gathering afterwards and someone's manning the iPod, like, all requests.
Oh, definitely. That's because once the wedding is over, I relinquish all responsibility. Someone else can figure the fuck out.
In everything.
Yeah. Literally, my legs will give out. I will have to be picked up and moved around my wedding. It is someone else's problem now. I went with a no requests, absolutely no requests from anyone stance with my DJ. But maybe I should dial it back.
No, I think you get to have the level of control that you want. And you guys have really specific desires, what you want to hear. And you know your friends and you know who's there. And you've clearly thought about everyone being able to dance.
Exactly.
I just like, what if the DJ goes rogue? Like, I feel like you should have a red phone policy.
Or like a safe word?
Yeah.
If he goes rogue, what does that even mean? Is he just going to start? He's going to read the room. No, he's very responsible. Don't scare me. Now, what do you guys, to wrap this up, what do you guys want to hear? What will make my wedding great? Just tell me.
The song that I always love to hear at a wedding is Shout. that's like, I feel like that one gets people in the dance floor.
Damn it,
Katie. It's active. It kind of gives you. Okay, so that was on your don't play. All right, wait, my other one, September by Earth, Wind, and Fire. You know what I'm talking about? Do you remember? Na 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 na. Something September.
That's like a Las Vegas buffet song.
What? It's such a good song to dance to at a wedding. Okay, how about Get Lucky?
I'm not a fan of Get Lucky. Oh, man. I've also banned Troll song.
Wait. What?
Okay,
what
the Troll
songs,
song.
What songs are on this playlist? Can you give us a little bit of a... Because I think I've been misjudging what I thought was your taste.
Really? What did you think was my taste? Get Lucky?
I don't know. I thought
What's
at least
Get
Lucky would show up on there. Yeah.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry.
Might,
let me pull that all the way back.
Get
Lucky is definitely on it.
Okay. All right.
I was thinking of Happy.
Oh, no. Happy, you can do without.
Get Lucky is exactly me, Dave. You're 100% on the money.
Okay, good. Okay. See, I got scared there for a little bit, and I'm like, is he going to be like, I've picked three Phantom of the Opera songs, you have to guess which three?
And I'll be performing one. You can just...
You're performing Les Mis.
Here are things that are on our playlist. If anyone at home wants to vicariously live this wedding this Saturday. Robin, Call Your Girlfriend.
Good.
The Outfield, Your Love. You know that song?
Probably.
We got Rihanna, We Found Love.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
We got, you know what? I got Bleachers on there. I Want to Get Better. You know that song? What's his
I'm
name?
Old.
Bleachers. No, you're not. What do you mean you're old? This was
I mean,
like three
I,
years
I'm
ago,
aware
years
that.
Ago, maybe.
Do you have any? Do you have any Beyonce on there?
Yeah,
of course.
Beyonce.
Countdown and Drunken Love, and
good.
Halo.
Nice.
So these
Give
are the
not
going
to throw Formation in there just to see who like pops off and starts crying.
Michelle was thinking about Formation.
There?
I just thought, I don't know. My grandma would faint.
Yeah, I want to see Michelle dancing aggressively at your conservative relatives.
I find this playlist to be diverse and fascinating and
Wait,
raucous.
What are your old songs?
My old songs
are
what, what is that Four Tops song? I Can't Help Myself. You know that song?
My Girl?
No. I have Stevie Wonder, Sign, Seal, Deliver.
Good one.
Mm.
This is a wedding song. You Make My Dreams Come True, Hall & Oates.
Yep.
And
also a good one.
That's where I'll embrace, I've heard this at every single wedding, but I don't care.
Yeah.
But that's.
No, this is the thing I was saying to Dave when you were getting your food, is just that weddings are kind of a place to let go of a sense that you need to like set yourself apart, like in terms of what you like or need to like recognize something new. And like, you know, if you're going to dance to the same song at every single wedding, it's fun at every single wedding.
That's
and it's,
true. Well,
I haven't been to a single wedding this year, and I'm really looking forward to dancing.
Every wedding in my college friend group has ended with the same song because we listened to it at the end of every party that we used to throw at our house in college.
Wow.
And that was Eddie Money, Take Me Home Tonight. And that'll be the final
That's
song.
That's good.
Play it now,
That's
Dave.
Good.
Okay, so for this mini segment, we're going to be completely servicey and hopefully helpful and not pedantic, which is what I was worried about, and now that's why I'm forced to intro this mini segment.
Maybe I should do the intro here.
Yes.
So
please.
In response to what's been happening politically, a lot of people have felt the need to grow the support net for some people that during the campaign, our president-elect sort of made feel unsafe. And one way to do that, whatever that cause may be, even if that person feeling unsafe is yourself, if you're a person who has the means, is through monetary donations. So we thought we'd each pick something we thought might be worthy of your time. And hey, get a little more involved in reinforcing that safety net while we wait for action points with how we feel. That too good?
No, do it. Dave, kick us off.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
I'm gonna pick two because I feel like my immigrant friends are kind of in a bad place right now, and should the law shift against them, I don't think it's going to be as visible as we feared. So I'm going to shout out MALDEF, the Latino legal voice for civil rights in America, at maldef.org and the National Immigration Law Center, NILC.org, both of which you could set up single or recurring donations and support the civil rights of the legal immigrants and undocumented immigrants, depending on which organization you feel comfortable supporting.
Patches.
Well, the day after Election Day, I immediately proceeded to give to Planned Parenthood. And it's something I feel strongly about, and it's probably going to take quite a beating over the next few years. And maybe it can stay afloat without the government's help for this time being. So that's what I did. But I'm trying to figure out if there is a good place, and maybe it is Our House Grief Support Center, but I really want to give some money to grief counseling and a place where people can go to just voice their feelings. I feel like that's really important right now. It clearly is important because I felt like our reviews at the top of the episode were really just venting and releasing and also feeling good, and listening to us, I guess, made them feel good. And I think that's important. So if anyone out there knows about grief support, I'm looking at Our House, but I'm not sure what to donate to.
So I also gave to Planned Parenthood the day after the election, and I'm going to set up monthly donations. But I want to give two others. First of all, subscribe to a newspaper. I subscribe to the New York Times and the Washington Post, and just feel really strongly that the role of the media and a free press is going to be so important, especially because we have a state-run press starting in Breitbart, and the possibilities of that are terrifying. And also, I've been looking into trying to find organizations that support putting progressives into politics on a local level, because I think that is kind of where you have to start from. Like Bernie Sanders had a lot of really good ideas that I didn't really think could start from the president. I think you need to start people on a local level and have them work their way up. And there's a group called Wellstone, which is started by the sons of Paul Wellstone, who was a senator from Minnesota who died in a plane crash in 2002. And it supports progressive leaders, and it trains them and gives them the tools they need to, you know, get into politics. And they have a lot of alums in state houses and state senates and city councils, and they're really starting on this grassroots level, which I think is where the future of the Democratic Party or just the left in general is going to come from. So I am excited to have heard about this group, and I plan to donate to them as well.
Can I just say one thing to all the people who listen to this who are not aligning with us politically at this moment, who are griping at home? I would also love to read about, maybe even throw money at, a young Republican kind of foundation, something similar to what you were just talking about, Katie, even though it is against what I am necessarily believing in at this current moment. I would love if there were people out there trying to educate and raise a new generation of Republicans and broad thinking people, and educate them. I think that's the huge thing that's missing from
what
all
do you
of the
mean
conversations.
Educate?
What? Well, just like
what does educate mean to you?
Being empathetic human beings and standing apart from what's taking place. You know, there were so many Republicans out there, John Kasich and many people who opposed Donald Trump and what's going on. And it just seems like there are rational Republican people out there. Maybe there's a way to nurture a new group and really make a conversation happen in America. And I don't know if you could throw money at that, but it'd be wonderful if it was possible. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, yeah. I didn't mean to frame this as like a sort of action against necessarily.
It just came,
but
it
I
came
do
up,
feel like,
popped in my mind.
Oh, yeah. No, I think we're all in favor of, you know, opening up dialogues later on. But in terms of positive places to put the stuff you're feeling right now, maybe don't do anything physically to anybody else or yourself.
Yes.
Maybe feel empowered somehow.
And I would assume no matter what your political leanings are, you support the free press and that subscribing to a newspaper, even if it's, you know, not necessarily something perceived as liberal, like subscribing to something that isn't Breitbart and an arm of the current administration is a good thing.
So for our segment three, you know, we're not trying to depress anyone here, but I think after last week's episode, we kind of had to have a response to all of that, right? I mean, our conversation last week was trudging through the muck, getting to the finish line, praying to God it was all going to work out, and looking forward to what art could bring us in the future, how we were wrapping this era up, and yeah, what it could, how we would react to this whole election, and that now it would be over, and how art would react to that. Now it seems almost impossible, right? Like, we probably won't get...
No. My calls of Anthony Weiner comedy and what happened to the Republican Party in 8 years, those are still solid calls.
Yeah, the Melania maybe. Sofia Coppola movie is only going to be more interesting now.
Yeah, but it's not going to happen for a few years, I would say.
No.
Gotta wait that one out now. Different times, different world. We're podcasting. It's before and after, truly. But we wanted to kind of discuss, like, where we all go from here. David over at IndieWire did an interesting critics poll this week about creating art in the wake of this election and the responsibility of artists and the responsibility of film critics and other types of critics, which I thought was interesting. Everyone should go read. But the one thing that I wanted to mention right off the top was I feel like we're already getting the art that is reacting to Trump, the art in the age of Trump, whatever that will be. I feel like we're already here. I feel like we're already living his era. Trump is not bringing something new. He is a bishop that took a queen, and now things like Black Lives Matter and LGBTQ rights and diversity, something that Hollywood spent all of 2016 trying to counter after the big Oscar so white kerfuffle. He has put that all in check. He's part of a bigger game. He's a piece. And we're already there. We're already watching art react to this. And this past weekend, Arrival came out, the new film from Denis Villeneuve, and starring Amy Adams. And it's, you know, a bigger blockbuster. It's about an alien encounter. Amy Adams stars as a linguist named Louise, who is contacted by the government when aliens start touching down on planet Earth, and she's going to make contact with them. We don't know. You know, it's a bit of a day the Earth stood still thing. We don't know what to do when aliens actually react, and this takes a very realistic approach. Maybe they're not so bad. Maybe we can communicate with them if we take 2 seconds, take a deep breath, and actually go inside. Of course, the whole world is not waiting for us to make contact, and it's certainly not on the same wavelength as America. So slowly things start to devolve in this scenario, and it's a ticking clock for Amy Adams, who needs to kind of crack the code to see what these aliens want in order for us to keep peace. You know, the great unknown, it's a lot easier to blow them away. It's a lot easier for China to kind of pull the trigger because of how they are in the world already. Everyone is in a different geopolitical state, and somehow man has to communicate with itself in order to communicate with aliens. And it feels very timely, not just because when these aliens arrive to Earth, there's a very 9/11-esque moment. Everyone stops. Everyone watches together. Not a moment of destruction, but a moment of reaction. That kind of that dead silence, that collective viewing. And so it takes an immediate kind of political turn, at least in my mind, from there. We've been in this world before. Can we all communicate together? Can we protect ourselves? Can we reach out and become one for 2 seconds? And that seems like a huge reaction to everything that we've been feeling over this election time. So I turn it to you guys and just be like, are we already seeing more of this art? Have you guys seen art that feels reactionary to Donald Trump and this movement and this swell, this surprise in the country? That it's not a surprise at all. We knew we were getting here. We just couldn't admit it to ourselves, and the art was telling us the entire time. Or maybe we don't have the art that Trump will bring. Maybe it's totally different. Katie, I know you were thinking about the Bush era a little bit when you were trying to kind of figure out how art might react to this. But
well, I wanted to back up a little bit. And I think with Trump and as he staffs his house and we talk about race and hate crimes and Steve Bannon and all of these really terrifying things for the future, I'm almost like forgetting to grapple with Hillary Clinton and the legacy that she's going to leave as this woman who came so close to being elected president and failed And what it feels like as a woman to have watched that happen. And I don't know, I think it's going to be a long time before I can really figure out the damage that's done to my brain, because it's a lot of what felt so horrible last week. And I think it felt horrible for a lot of people, not just women. And it's made me think of the Black Mirror episode Nosedive, which we talked about a couple weeks ago with Joanna. I hadn't seen it yet when we talked about it. And I watched it and felt so strongly about it and the way that it talked about women's roles in society and how women are expected to be a certain way and how they are judged so harshly for that and what it takes to really break that norm. And I think that episode really hits at this awareness we've had about women in the last year or so. You know, I think the big revelation that has come in, I mean, the big thing that in terms of women that's been talked about is sexual assault and more visibility of victims and the way that Bill Cosby kind of got prosecuted finally. But the way that Hillary Clinton had to act and be a certain way and could never do the right thing is, I think she brought that to light in a way that I hope we deal with more after we're done coping with whatever Trump brings us. And I'll think about that episode of Black Mirror a lot, and hopefully it can show us the way forward and out of that.
I mean, in terms of stuff that has been right all the time, I think there's been a lot of art around Black Lives Matter issues, liberal political issues, and even conservative issues, especially how the right views war heroes, that has been created in the mindset of actual America and not election America. And I think we forgot, because the election ostensibly went on for well over a year, that it was pretty obvious, I think, to people who were responding to culture and not necessarily responding to pop culture or media, what the lay of the land was. And it's like certain things become obvious in hindsight. Like, we, you know, live in a world where all our like popular television shows are set in cities, and all of a sudden we're like, even something out of that is a minority, like Atlanta, still is not representing this like huge white voter bloc that feels disenfranchised. So I don't know. At one hand, I feel like I should, you know, I don't know, not have laughed so hard at the possibility that Back to the Future 2 could have been right 2 years in a row. But then another part of me was able to like go back to some of the music that's been released this year, and some of the, I guess, writing that's been done about the Dakota Access Pipeline, and be able to, I guess, reappreciate it as something that I slanted politically because it wasn't an election. And it's not that it's not political, but it wasn't a single party's political artistic statement, which I think as we got closer and closer to election day, it was like, you know, Michael Moore as a surprise anti-Trump movie, and like otherwise things, you know, a lot of the subtext I think faded into the background because all of our emotions were so frayed. So I'm glad that Arrival's out there, because it sounds like, you know, as calming as a mass alien abduction can go, in the sense that we just kind of need to talk, and then I don't know, maybe things blow up at the end.
No, but I mean, it's definitely gratifying. It gives you hope that we can work through these tough times and actually reach across the oceans and become one. But Dave, I want to back up for a second. You kind of insinuated that maybe we got a little complacent with that art kind of just drifted us along during the Obama years. Am I hearing you right? Did we get lazy during the Obama years on both sides, the creative side, Hollywood? I mean, that's the conversation we've had for the last 8 years. Hollywood's dead. Blockbusters are terrible. I mean, is this the ease? Is this the joy of the Obama years? Were we creating harsher, better art during the Bush era? And I should say that the day after...
I think liberal media was. Yeah, yeah. Well, I think anger focuses media to a certain extent, or at least focuses message. Because if somebody wrongs you as a creator or as a writer, and you're able to latch onto that in very clear terms and communicate it, it's much easier than what Hollywood was dealing with during the Obama years, which is like, financing for mega franchises or things that you could just really easily pitch to one small subgroup. And because of that, you have things like Oscars Are So White, because the community starts self-policing its, you know, weird warts and boils, because it doesn't need to like turn externally against a force. It's the same reason why you like you get a lot of good wartime media. I mean, also because, you know, like the US government funds Disney Studios and allows that to be like be a continuing movie studio for the rest of time. But like those things, I think definitely like the spark of that, the same way that you get a lot of amazing art to come out of, you know, countries that are in actual revolution or disenfranchised people. It's like, you know, the anger focused voice or the frustration focused voice, I think really benefits narrative. I guess the only reason that I would argue against that or I would argue that's only liberal media is because I don't feel like I had a lot of sharpened conservative narratives during the Obama years. And I'm not sure if that's because of like self-censorship to a certain degree, or if they're just like, at some point, I'm not willing to hear like a narrative that's as aggressively towards my as aggressive towards my beliefs. So like, am I ready for a Klan narrative that supports that, even if it's a really good one? Probably not.
No.
Exactly.
I don't think you have to be. I mean, I think
complete disgust in your voice, Katie. I love hearing that. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's going to be interesting about art is maybe not necessarily explicitly political, but just, you know, what comes out of people with liberal bent feeling on the ropes and feeling like they're back to being the minority. Like, you think about the art of the 60s and, you know, this is America in the middle of a war that it didn't want, and, you know, in the Nixon years, and you've got stuff that isn't like, you know, The Graduate isn't about any of this stuff, but it's an art that it's art that really spoke to the time. So I don't know that it's going to be as specific as like speaking out against the Trump administration. It's going to be different and trickier.
It's interesting. Like, the Bush era had big movies and small movies and big movies that seemed to condemn or seemed to reckon with the era that we were in. I'm thinking of Good Night and Good Luck. I'm thinking of The Dark Knight. I'm thinking about, obviously, Fahrenheit 9/11. We'll definitely get another Michael Moore movie. Apparently, Michael Moore was at the Trump Tower the other day, definitely filming a new movie. Of course, this is bread and butter.
Moore is back.
We'll probably have to get Syriana too.
The thing about Fahrenheit 9/11, though, like, do you really remember the content of Fahrenheit 9/11?
No.
Me neither. It's not like that movie is remembered for being a flashpoint, but what it was, I mean, it was about the Bush family's ties with the Saudi family.
Well, that's the thing. We got like so many movies. Like, we got Oliver Stone's W. We got Lions for Lambs. What was Lions for Lambs? We got Star Wars Episode 3. That is a political, that is a Bush era movie.
Doesn't he literally say, if you're not with me, you're against me?
Yes.
I mean, there was just so many movies, but the difference here, I think, is there was just... And I didn't think about it until today, kind of prepping for this conversation, which was just so much privilege and white emphasis running amok in the Bush era, right? This was not diverse commentary whatsoever in any movie.
No.
I'm trying to think of anything taking a stance or talking about what we talk about today. It's just so different.
No, and that's the kind of thing that gives me the most hope about the legacy of the Obama era. There's been a lot of articles about how Trump can really undo a lot of what Obama did in office, and I think that's true, but... As we talked about last week, I think the way that culture has diversified itself finally in response to the Obama years, or just, you know, as a result of how culture develops, I think that's going to continue. And I think you're going to get more voices. And if anything, Hollywood acting in opposition to an outwardly racist administration is going to continue to promote those voices. And it is going to be a different form of opposition. It's not just going to be white guys screaming against the establishment, which is really encouraging to me.
I
know what the white guys are going to do, though.
What are they going to do?
So, like, the techno government is watching you thriller that's sort of percolating right now. That's going to go into fucking hard drive.
Like,
maybe
Mr.
not
Robot's
Jack Bauer's back, but, like, oh, yeah. Like, the idea that these, like, middle-of-the-road shows are going to start pushing because they can, they have the benefit of pushing it and staying in focus, is that, like, maybe you don't trust your government now. They're like, Mr. Robot's like, there's a whole new audience that finds us relatable.
Do you think that watching Parks and Recreation now would just like hurt too much for its optimistic view of government?
No.
No.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I love that show. Go ahead.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised if we get something similar in terms of the idea that it's like, because that's what I was talking about, is like we're living in a non-Parks and Rec world, but like that was set in like a non-city and was talking about how civics was great and, you know, did a pretty good job of representing viewpoints of like small town issues in a funny way. That is something that I think we're going to get back, because I don't think it's going to be, there's going to be a lot of Hollywood and media in general that yells about other people being racist. But I think like subversively and market wise, I think we're just going to see an expansion back into some of these arenas that we kind of let wither and die.
What do you mean?
Whether we should let NBC do it or not, I guess is something we should talk about.
What kind of arenas?
Oh, like non-urban sitcoms that maybe aren't super diverse, but make up for that in a message or like a pro-women stance or whatnot.
I mean,
something that's like...
Everyone should catch up with The Ranch on Netflix. That is huge. Exactly what
Richard
you're talking
Lawson
about.
Richard Lawson legitimately likes it.
It's good. It
oh,
is
yeah.
not, but
I've never watched it. I can't judge.
I mean, I was, what is it, the one I used to watch, kind of like begrudgingly hate watch, but like Blue Mountain State, sort of based on Colorado stuff. So it's like they definitely have existed, but I'm waiting for one to sort of move into the forefront and to like sort of pull out. And then I want movies to, like, I'm trying to figure out if they... If, like, since we're in this system where there are so few middle ground movies, do, like, the blockbusters start becoming, you know, like, V for Vendetta,
right,
like, overarching? Or do they become much more subtle and focused and winking and talking about, like, power
dynamics?
Here's
what I think is going to be the hugest thing for blockbusters is Donald Trump has made a huge part of his campaign getting back at China. And so much of Hollywood blockbusters currently are aimed at getting into China and trying to get them in front of their audiences. And there's a huge conflict there that I'm not sure how much he is going to be able to enact any of the things he said about it, but maybe even that attitude will make them less inclined to take American blockbusters. That could really change the way that these movies are made.
Yeah.
Wait, but
or
that,
like a
it
whole
could actually
slate
change
of upcoming
it for the
movies.
It could. It could. Or it could bankrupt Hollywood.
That's true. That's true, or which could also be to their benefit. But, Dave, I was curious, you know, you were the master of mega franchises here. Can Hollywood be political, or should we hold them responsible? Are they accountable to politicize? Can a Marvel movie become about the Trump era?
I mean, are they accountable? No. Is somewhere right now they're doing Josh Brolin as Thanos motion capture as Trump just for fun? Absolutely. like, I don't.
Isn't that
like,
really
you
expensive
up,
to do just
I mean,
for fun?
Well, I don't think they're going to like fully render it. But maybe they will. I don't know. Like, you would be surprised how much some entertainment industry insiders are willing to waste money to make fun
themselves.
Of Donald Trump and entertain themselves. But I think. Like you were saying with Star Wars, like Star Wars, now the prequels are a Bush narrative, and I'll never know if it was ever something besides that, but it is now and it will be for all time. So, like, of course they can if they want to. I mean, it's a little bit hard because you're not like single crazy George Lucas writing all the scripts yourself, but I do think that they could do something like simply let their writers express it to the degree that they want to. And if no one stops that up the ladder, then yeah, some stuff's going to make it into the cut. I'll just be interested to see if it like coalesces as much as the prequel series did around the idea of like electing a tyrant.
Right. I just, you know, in this piece that David ran on IndieWire, the survey, two points were made. One, Eric Cohn, the lead critic there, just made a very blunt statement that I totally agree with. Movies devoid of ideas are failures. True. I think David would also agree, even though he's not here. The other thing is that Mark Harris, cultural commentator, you know, mentioned that trying to force politics into these movies or make statements ASAP is really a quick way to make art just horrible. And there's really no point in trying to be reactionary to any of this. It kind of will bleed in, and it really can't solve the problems. We will find the Trump era films years after the Trump era ends, likely. But I'm just so mad. I feel like if Leonardo DiCaprio with $100 million sitting in his bank account right now, can't he like hire a big rig truck to drive over Trump signs in people's lawns? Like, couldn't Hollywood solve this problem?
What do you want them to do?
I don't know. Money? I want them to do something. I don't want Joss Whedon to make little comedy sketches for the internet. I want them to do something. I don't know. That made me very angry. And I don't, that's forcing art to do things that it's not organically doing. And yet I want Hollywood to take a stance. I want a blockbuster movie. I guess I don't want to wait for 2007. I don't want to wait for the 2008 Oscars where No Country for Good Men and There Will Be Blood and
No
all
Country
these amazing,
for Old Men.
And all these amazing movies are competing for Oscars at the end of the Bush era. I want 2008's Oscars right now.
I think that when you do that, you kind of ask to exacerbate the culture war that got us here. And you have all of
True.
These liberals in Hollywood making the art that tells Trump
True.
People how wrong they are, that only allows them to entrench themselves, which is exactly what happens from the other direction. Like, the Dinesh D'Souza movies don't convince any of us that Hillary Clinton is a monster. I think when art is more subtle and kind of, you know, worms its way into you, or even like a smaller form of protest. I keep thinking about Ava DuVernay's A Wrinkle in Time, which is currently casting and is, you know, it's turning the Murray family in this book.
Filming,
that's
currently
been,
filming.
Oh, sorry, currently filming. It keeps announcing cast members. But, you know, the Murray family in this book that's always been read as white is being cast as multiracial with Gugu Mbatha-Raw as the mother and Chris Pine as the father.
Awesome.
And that is going to feel like a form of protest when it comes out, just based on the state of race relations in this country and the administration.
Yeah. That's what separates
I'm really
us.
Looking forward to things like that.
That separates us from the Bush era. Although the one thing that I'm worried about is, can we have a movie like Spotlight now? I wish Spotlight came out 1 year later, because I feel like the Fourth Estate was a revered thing during the Bush era. I'm thinking of Good Night and Good Luck, I guess, specifically. But now it's been so demoted by the Fifth Estate. We even had a horrible movie called The Fifth Estate. And can we praise the media in the Trump area? Can we make a great newspaper movie? Can a movie remind people that facts matter? And that's what I really hope for. Maybe not. I don't need a Trump protest movie, but I need a movie that convinces people that facts matter and it can't be The Inconvenient Truth, the most boring movie on the planet. It has to be something invigorating.
Yeah,
it has to be a blockbuster.
Climate change is still going to kill all of us and none of us.
Oh, we're definitely doomed. Today I was telling someone that I was just like, I can't even get worked up about climate change anymore because it's so over. Like, we're just, our children weep. But not to get too political or anything.
I'm trying to think about a Marvel character that would be able to tell you that facts matter, and I don't think there is one.
Leo,
so I think
Leo just scooped up Captain Planet, the rights. He's going to make that movie.
Oh my God,
maybe
that's because that's so insufferable. Just thinking about that is so insufferable.
See, and this is what I was talking about. It just gets people to entrench themselves, even Dave, who is a liberal.
I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio's money would have been better spent renting trucks to drive over Donald Trump signs than buying the Captain Planet rights. But prove me wrong, Leonardo DiCaprio. Paint yourself blue and you go out there and you do it for yourself.
I would highly
recommend... There will never be a Captain Planet movie.
I guess to wrap up, I would highly recommend everyone see Arrival, because, Katie, I think it's what you're talking about. It's not a damning movie. It is not a fearful condemnation about the future or a weird portrait, a refracted portrait of Trump or Trump-like figures. It is about peace, and it is about coming together. And that's what we have to, hopefully, Hollywood can kind of push that forward over the years to come.
Yeah.
And I would have one more recommendation for both of you, and it's a movie called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, a movie that is about political overreach. It is about an identity crisis in America. It is about being repressed and being stuck in a conservative line of thinking. This is clearly J.K. Rowling existing in modern Britain and feeling Brexit, whatever led to Brexit, and looking at what we do here in America and how we suffocate people in this country through different laws and through social norms. And it is a fascinating movie using the blockbuster scale to really talk about how we're just strangled sometimes by politics. It's a dark movie.
Okay, but
you're making it sound like a libertarian movie.
It is a dark movie.
What's the name of the thing the thing that looks like a platypus?
I forget, but it steals jewelry.
Yeah, isn't that the Niddler?
I can't remember the name of any of the beasts of this movie.
Is it a Fantastic Beast?
I really need to buy the book because there's just so many words to learn after Fantastic Beast. The movie certainly takes its time getting going, but Katie, you might be onto something because it's definitely talking about a weird culture war and like, do you rise up if you're repressed or is terrorism of any sort bad? It's a really complicated movie and I'll be interested to see how the franchise kind of pans out in this direction that it's going. It's complementary to Harry Potter, but it is a much more macro-minded movie.
Yeah, and isn't there going to be four of them?
Four more.
J.K. Rowling to steer into this skid. Just like Grindel Trump.
Well, I don't think Grindelwald.
Played by Johnny Depp.
I don't think Grindelwald would be a Trump equivalent, based on the things you hear about him in this movie. I shouldn't say too. I don't know what is a spoiler. I'm afraid of Harry Potter fans and what they might think is a spoiler, so I won't say too much. But I will say that casting Ezra Miller is a great, I don't know, that's a great bit of casting because he brings social curiosity to that role. It's interesting. It's all very interesting. Go see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Go see Arrival and buckle up, right? This is, shit is going down.
We'll be here.
We're here.
Yeah. We've been around since Obama's first term and we're not going anywhere now.
Holy shit.
Man, you guys haven't seen Republican President Dave. You guys, I think everybody's going to have a lot of fun.
Yeah, I didn't know any of you guys in the Bush era.
Better than.
It's in the streets.
That does it for this week's Fighting in the War Room. We will not be back next week. We'll be celebrating Thanksgiving. Patches will be on his mini moon. Dave's going to be taking a break from editing this podcast. So
No podcast week.
But we promise we're not going anywhere, as we just said in that Art in the Age of Trump segment. So please enjoy your Thanksgivings. Don't fight too much with your relatives, but also stand up to racism. And we'll be back after Thanksgiving. In the meantime, tell the people who you are.
I am Matt Patches, senior entertainment editor of Thrillist.com. I am on Twitter at Mr. Patches. And we have a website, fightingintheworroom.com, where you can listen to episodes, you can share the episodes, or you can leave comments based on what we talked about today. Hey, you should check that and read them out loud next time if you go on fightingintheworroom.com.
I am Dave Gonzalez. Spell my first name, D-A-7-E. It's also my Twitter handle. I blog at geek.com. Also have some good pieces up at Thrillist.com. And I do more podcasting at fightinginthewarroom.com, including Storm of Spoilers with Joanna Robinson and Neil Miller. This week, we are finally going to Westworld, and Joanna's going to mind dump us, but with spoilers. So that's our plus decoding Westworld content. I'm looking forward to it, because she's going to teach me something.
And I'm Katie Rich. You can find me at vanityfair.com, where I edit Joanna's wonderful Westworld post, which is how I get to write her coattails of all the great stuff that she does. I'm on Twitter at Katie Rich, K-A-T-E-Y-R-I-C-H, and we're all on Twitter at F-I-T-W-R, where you can talk to us about whatever you're feeling after the election, or after Arrival, or about Fantastic Beasts. We're open for all of your thoughts, and your answers to this week's lightning round question, which was...
In honor of self-care, what has been your post-election pick-me-up?
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back talking to you after Thanksgiving. Now you do what they told you. And 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 now you do what they told you. You're under control. And now you do what they told you. You're under control. And now you do what they told you. You're under control. And now you do what they told you.